Australian futsal community, welcome to Futsal Australia podcast number 21. My name is Andre Carr, known on social media as The Doctor, and I'm here today with Renan Fenerich, or in Portuguese we say Renan Fenerich. Renan, welcome to the podcast.
Andrea, thank you so much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be participating here and an honor to be here after so many important people that you have interviewed so far.
It's great to have you. I look forward to talking to you. This podcast is going to be talking about the grassroots. So we're going to be talking about Renan's background growing up in Brazil and moving to Australia, his futsal experiences, coaching methodologies, his academy, North Coast Futsal Academy. And now he's also a futsal social media creator. So we're going to be talking about that too. Renan, lots to talk. Usually we start with the background, but today we're going to do different. We're going to start with your current moment. What do you do? Well, who is Renan for futsal in Australia?
Thank you for the question. It's a great way to start, and I'm passionate about this. I have been coaching here in Australia for now 12 years. I have been where I am now on the north coast of New South Wales for about 7. So the first 5 years of my life here was spent in Brisbane, so where I lived there and I worked. I had, you know, initially without much English, I worked as in all jobs possible to make.
What were some of the jobs that had you?
So the very first one, obviously, as many Brazilians, as a cleaner, and then I progressed a little bit to work as a waiter in the restaurant.
Progressed
because the people could start to understand me. Then I had a little bit of a work at a nightclub in Brisbane as well, just, you know, picking up glasses and stubbies and taking out rubbish and stuff like that, just to basically pay the bills at the beginning while I was, you know, creating, you know, a network and getting to know people involved with futsal and all that.
Oh, that's really good. And how'd you get your involvement with futsal in Australia, and how you ended up starting your own academy as well?
Yeah, so as I said, back in Brisbane, I created some contacts there, and I started to first, you know, do one-on-one coaching lessons, and then got to know people. So obviously those players were part of teams, so they introduced me to, you know, their coaches, and then I got involved with Australian Futsal Association back in Brisbane. At the time, they were still called Vikings Futsal. Yeah. So they had their head office there at Acacia Reed. So I started coaching on Sundays there every fortnight as an academy coach for kids from, I don't know, from 3 or 4 years old, the first group, up to under 17s.
Is there like just a fortnight clinics they used to have? Those they start really young, and as it goes, gets old, and...
Yeah. So it was pretty much almost like a full Sunday of coaching. So they just get all age groups in different time slots. So that was my first, you know, coaching experience. And from there, as you know, AFA has their own pathways. And so... I went as a coach to, you know, their nationals in, I think it was in the, can't remember the name of the city now, it was on the border between New South Wales and Victoria, Albury, Wodonga or something like that, those two
really?
Cities.
When was that?
When? Yeah. 2012, I believe.
2012.
Yeah, so that was a nationals that we went there. So then they have this schools pathway as well. So at the same time when they made their school teams, they needed coaches. So I had, you know, I was having experiences there in the school system, in the club system. And then soon I became the academy's manager there for them. And then, you know, progressed from that to, you know, later after we moved to Lismore, after getting in contact with Vini Leite from, at the time, Far North Coast New South Wales Futsal in Lismore. That's where, you know, I brought a team from Brisbane to that competition, And then I got in contact with him. So he said, look, there's an opening here. Would you like to take the position? And then I had, you know, my wife and I had just come back from Brazil after finally getting our permanent visa. So that's, you know, I thought, well, let's go for the challenge. And I accepted the position in Lismore, where I worked for 6 weeks. And then I moved on to further down to Grafton, and where I live at the moment, have been living since 2013, and I manage and coach here at the North Coast Futsal. So basically, we work between sort of, I don't know if you know much about the region here, but so there's a...
Not much.
Yeah, so basically, if you think of Lismore, where you went to play once, I was there watching you at the International Cup that Vinny held there. So if you think of Lismore, so we are sort of 1.5 hours from there, so and all the way to Coffs Harbour. So that's our region, sort of Iamba to Coffs Harbour, which gets Grafton halfway. So we've developed a lot of things here, so like futsal academies, skills acquisition programs, all futsal based, and really encouraging the kids to play futsal. It's a new thing here. Countryside is always a little bit further behind in terms of, you know, getting to know the good things. Like some kids in the city, in Melbourne, in Sydney, they just eat the ball if you let them. And in here, if you tell them what they want, they will ask you, what's futsal? You know, what's even futsal? And then, so my job, as I like to say, is also not only as a head coach, but it's as a development officer. So I take, you know, I go to schools and during PE classes, and I, you know, I teach them about what futsal is. You know, I show them the difference between a soccer ball and a futsal ball, and like from scratch. There's that really reward, the rewarding feeling as well. But I also really like the, you know, the academies.
Have you noticed much difference since you started doing this of people knowing what futsal was to what people know what futsal is now?
Yeah, absolutely, Andrea. It has been really pleasing to see, you know, back when I arrived here, unfortunately, futsal had its reputation damaged by the previous people who were operating in the region here. So they, you know, they came, they did a big sign-on for their summer comp, got people's money, left, never ran the comp. So, you know, people, you know, didn't know who they were. So they blame this sport. They blamed futsal instead of blaming those specific people. So I had that extra hurdle to skip. So since then, in 2013, so it was a lot of rebuilding that trust with the sport, teaching them how good it is and how the kids can benefit and how much fun it is and etc. And I can, it really shows, like these days, the kids are just, you know, it's not an uncommon thing anymore for kids to come to me and say, coach, I'm not playing soccer anymore this year. I just want to play futsal.
It's like we always say that the two sports have to work together, but I can't say that we don't love it when we hear the kids are not playing football. We do get that feeling, don't we?
It's somehow very pleasing to hear that. And I mean, honestly, Andrea, I think, sorry if I'm getting off topic a little bit, but I feel that things are happening the other way around here. So like kids during the most crucial developmental stages, you know, when they're really young, they're getting, at least here where I live in the region, they're getting volunteers to coach then one of the dads. And don't get me wrong, we absolutely love volunteers, but there's a lot of, there's a lack of knowledge, if you will. So the kids don't get the best possible coaching when they need the most. And then the grown-ups get the best coaches. So in my opinion, the best coaches should be put to the kids, not to the grown-ups. Obviously, not talking about professionals. Obviously, if you're getting paid for it, obviously you have to have a good coach. But in terms of amateur level, you know.
Yeah, it makes sense what you're saying. But First of all, there's not many futsal coaches. We're going to get to that topic later on, but there's not many futsal coaches we have. They're coaching their high end. They're not coaching the grassroots. And yeah, you're definitely right. Renan, what are some of the programs that you offer there, North Coast Futsal Academy?
Yeah, so at the moment, we have a high-performance futsal academy program, which operates out of three different venues and spread out in a 250K radius. So we've got an academy that covers the lower Clarence Valley, which is in the Yamba and McLean region. We've got another academy in the Grafton region, and we've got another academy in the Coffs Harbour region. So there's three different days, so three different groups. And then we have a skills acquisition program, which is, we call it the BSA.
Let's just go back to the high-end academy. How does that program work?
So the program goes all year round. So this is one of the things that I keep, you know, hammering here. And then futsal is not a summer sport. It's never been, it should never be a summer sport only. So it's all year round. There is no reason.
If anything, should be a winter sport, shouldn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. I see kids out in the cold, freezing, raining. It just like makes no sense. But anyway, so it's all year round, the academy program. So we go with school terms. We follow the public school calendar. So basically they get, you know, in a normal school term, so they will get at least 40 sessions per year. Yeah. And that is if we don't do any school holiday clinics or anything like that, you know. Sometimes we double down if there's a major competition. For example, we're taking kids to Melbourne or Gold Coast or something, then we go, we train, you know, on the weekends in preparation for it, and etc. But that's, those are special occasions.
And the other programs?
Yeah, so we've got we created a bridge to connect with that high performance academy. So so basically our high performance academy starts from under eights all the way through to youth, which for us here is under 17s. Then so what we created is a program that connects kids that are younger than eight onto the high performance academy. So if they're not quite there yet, or if they a lot younger, they start in the skills acquisition program. We call it the BSA. So we use that, that stands for Brazilian Skills Acquisition. So the fact that I'm using obviously Brazilian is to share with the young kids what I had when I was a child and that experience. And that it's really great. You know, you see some of the videos there on social media, kids, you know, always smiling, having fun. We do like multi-skill things and, you know, fun games and etc. So they fall in love for the sport when they're three. And I've got kids that started when they like on not even three, like 2 years and like 10 months. And then now this year, they are first year of High Performance Academy as under eights, and they just flying.
Great. Yeah. How what's the best age to start, in your opinion?
I'll say three. But that can vary slightly because my son's 3 years old, Thomas. And he only just started at the skills acquisition program, and you can see, you know, most kids have their attention span very short, as you know. But I can see that he's not quite there yet in terms of, you know, following instructions and doing things quite. He just wanders around a little bit. But on the other hand, I see other 3-year-olds that are doing, you know, quite well in terms of doing what they asked to and understanding instructions. Obviously, when they're that young, there shouldn't be many instructions anyway, but you know, the very basic you should tell them, and they should be able to. So it could be three and a half, sort of. That's what I think.
Yeah, great. I think every child is different. What advice would you give to parents that want to get their kids involved, starting, like a parents with kids 3-4 year olds? Before I ask that question, I've noticed that usually the parents, they're crazy futsal players, soccer players. The child he plays at home, right? And then he comes to us and it's a bit more ready, would say. But what advice would you give to parents that want to get their kids into the game, fall in love for the game?
Yeah, look, I think if they really want their kids to get involved in the game and to have a good first experience, it's you know, crucial that they look for an academy, for a coach that fits in with that philosophy, that mentality. You know, if you take your three-year-old kid to an academy and, you know, the coach is just a big, you know, general shouting, kids look scared, you don't want to be there because your kid won't last long. It will have a terrible experience. It will damage the whole process. So, as a parent, not as a coach, if I see 5 minutes of that, I'll say thank you very much and I'll walk away.
Now, the other way, what advice would you give to coaches that want to coach kids of their preschool age?
Yeah, look, first thing, if you want to work with kids, you have to have patience. That's, in my opinion, the number one skill for coaches, not even, you know, knowing how to kick a ball. So you got to be patient because it's a long process, but at the same time, it's a very rewarding process. Like a kid that, you know, you pass the ball to him or her and then they miss the ball trying to trap it 10 times and then the 11th time they get it and they just open that big smile. It's just such a small achievement, but for us, but for them, it's just like the biggest thing in the world. So if you have patience to work with kids, if you're kind and compassionate, you know, and try and, you know, put yourself in their shoes, and because their brains are not yet developed, Andre, and as you know, like if you try and skip, you know, that stage and try and coach them like if they were adults, it's definitely not going to work. So if you want my advice for anyone wanting to coach young kids is that work. If you're not patient, try and find a way to be more before you get started, because otherwise you will get frustrated yourself and you will provide a terrible experience for the kids. So better not to get involved if you don't think you have those skills. Obviously, once you have that sorted, you will need the knowledge to coach futsal, you know, what's involved in, you know, dribbling and passing and striking the ball, but that's later down the track if you're talking about young ages.
makes sense. Rina, I remember seeing one photo of a photo that you put on social media, and the photo was of yourself with lots of little kids and you were down on your knees, and the caption of the photo was, "You have to get down to their level to talk to them." Can you explain what you was something like that on those lines? It might not be exactly what I said. Do you remember that content?
I do, exactly. Yeah.
Could you explain what that means?
Yeah, so you know, if you look at, you know, sports psychology and psychology for children, a lot of books, they mention about eye level. So what I meant in that post, you know, why I was on my knees. So imagine if you like a three-year-old that is, 75 centimeters tall. And then you got, you know, someone that's 180, 2 meter tall, you know, just, you're not even looking at their level. So they need to put their, you know, head up like that. So if you come down to their level, so eye level, so that's why you will see a lot of referees doing that as well. When they take photos with kids, they go on their knees to be at the same height or similar height. So that creates an extra bond with the kids. So they're not looking, you know, really high, and you're not the big scary monster general that, so you're just at the same sort of height and you can talk to them, you know, looking, you know, straight in the face and being kind. And that's why I try to do, like, with under eights, under tens, if they are not, you know, really tall, or, you know, most of them are not anyway. But so I just go on my knee, eye level. So, and I think the way they absorb that instruction is much better if you having eye contact, you know, and if you are at a high level. So there's been some studies about that in psychology for children and children in sports. So that's what that post was you mentioning.
No, that's really good. Very well explained. Renan, we're meant to talk about your background, but we go right into the coaching right away. We're going to go back to your background later on, but when coaches start coaching, they face a challenge of finding information to become a coach. So how I get that question a lot, say, where do I find some, how do I coach kids? You know, that's the classic question.
How did I become a coach, or how to find information, or both? So in my case, I started my coaching journey back in Brazil. Should we go to that topic now, or just?
Well, let's go there. If you're in Brazil.
Oh. Sorry?
Let's go back to Brazil if you start coaching.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll try and be as brief as I can. So in terms of coaching, that's where I started, back in Brazil, my home country, our home country. So basically, I had the experience coming through as a player, as an amateur player there where I lived. And then at the age of 16, I also started to be sort of an assistant coach to the under 20s mm-hmm. coach. And then, you know, later I started, I finished high school and started university. So I have a bachelor's degree in physical education. So it's, as you know, 4 years full-time uni back in Brazil, yeah. Which during those 4 years, futsal was part of the course, the graduation, but it was a very small part of the course. So my experience at that time was still continued to be as an assistant coach in our hometown there, and I also got an apprenticeship. Missed that one. At a club. Because like in Brazil, you can only be hired as a full-time employee or when you like from the third year in uni. So the first 2 years in uni had to be like in a traineeship, something like that. So I started in a club there called Mascani. So that was my first, you know, experience as a coach, not as an assistant coach. So we had academies there, sort of similar to here, but we would, you know, train 3 times a week, you know, 2 hour sessions, play, you know, competitions in the region. So that was my first experience there. So a lot of practical experience, bringing from, you know, player onto assistant coach and then coach. A lot of the things that I was doing as a coach, I stopped doing simply because I understood that, you know, they were starting to be a bit outdated, you know, like getting to the court and telling the kids to run 20 laps around the court. It's not a thing. Or at the time, maybe it was. So when I finished uni, I was hired full time at that club. And then straight away, a few months later, I started my post-graduation degree in São Paulo at Gama Filho University. So that was 2 years, like, I think around 360 hours of, you know, futsal and football, you know, teaching methodology and how to coach and, you know, everything's only futsal and football. So that's when I started to sort of open my mind a little bit more. I got involved with, you know, coaches who were, you know, involved in the São Paulo's Série Ouro, Golden Series, and Série Prata, Silver Division there. So that's what led me to do my end of graduation thesis. So that was like really good because I took that new knowledge onto the courts, and so I adjusted a lot of my coaching that was outdated from what I learned when I was a kid to a new sort of way to coach, a more fun, more modern way to coach, and then, you know, brought that to Australia later on.
I know a lots of what you did wouldn't be possible in Australia. In the sports science university here, I don't think they even know what futsal is. But looking back at your journey learning futsal, and if you had to redo that journey again, what were the most important steps of that journey?
Oh, good, Good question. I think the most important steps of that journey, obviously, was the decision that I made to go on to a post-graduation degree that to further my studies, you know, because I could have kept going and settled for that job as a coach and still doing things that are not, you know, ideal or correct because of what I learned, the previous knowledge as a player. So I think that was a crucial step for me to go into a post-graduation university and do a degree there for 2 years, you know, to have lectures with professors like Wilton Santana, Pesce de Oliveira, world champion, you know, Alcides Scaglia. So all the top names in Brazil, as you know, they were in that course, led by Banzé in São Paulo. So it was really good. I think that was the highlight for me, and that really, I wouldn't change that. I would do it, you know, 10 times again if I had to. And obviously after that in Australia, I continued because, you know, things keep changing and keep evolving. In Australia, I did the two required courses, the only two required courses that FFA, Football Australia, provides you, which are the futsal certificate and the futsal license. Yeah. Very basic, but, you know, you got to have those. Then from that, you know, obviously that qualifies you to go from the community courses onto advanced courses. That's when I did my AFC level one coaching license, which for me was really good. So it was, I think only very few courses like that, maybe two or three were run in Australia, I think, maybe. And I was honored and be participating in one of those. It was run in Sydney, at the Valentine Sports Complex there, and I had the pleasure to be coached by, you know, many AFC instructors, including former Futsal Roos coach Stephen Knight, who is an awesome person and coach. I have, you know, great respect for him. He knows everything about futsal, so I have great admiration and respect for him. And also Miles, the current Futsal Roos coach, was there as well. We had a great week. It was just like full-time sort of every day, Monday to Friday, and it was a great addition to
that. Was just before the pandemic, wasn't it?
Yes, so probably maybe in 2018, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just a couple of years before the pandemic. So that was really good, and I felt really like renewed and energized and updated, mm-hmm. you know, to be part of that, you know. So I think there is no room for you to stop learning or stop studying. If you want to evolve, you know, in futsal or, you know, even in life, you know, create new habits, you know, exercising, reading, whatever you want to do, meditating, there's no room for you to just stop. You know, you just go, you keep going and you keep studying, you keep learning, because things change. So you got to, you know, stay up to date with those developments.
Yeah, for sure. Talk about the FC license still. So we don't have many happening in Australia. As you said, I think there were three groups in the last few years. Not many happening in Australia at all. We haven't had one since that last one that you guys did in 2018. I think that was the last one that happened. Mm-hmm. How did they work? How did the course work exactly? If you can break it down a little bit of what you learned each day, or if you can remember.
Yeah. Yeah, so from what I can remember, so it was definitely a full week. So like every day, like Monday to Friday, it was roughly from 8:30 in the morning to about 5:30 in the afternoon. So the course had, you know, several modules. Like we learned about fitness, all related to futsal, of course, fitness. And then we learned about, you know, we had a quick module about laws of the game. We had modules about, you know, tactical aspects of the game, you know, defensively, attacking-wise. We had modules to talk about technical training, analytical processes, micro cycles, macro cycles of training, those sort of preparations for a season, if you're working at a high level. So yeah, it was very comprehensive, and then there was almost every afternoon you would have to do like a practical like lesson. So most mornings you would stay in class. They would show videos, use the board, you know, draw things, teach you things, answer questions. Then in the afternoon you'd have a bit more of a relaxed sort of, not so much relaxed, but a more practical experience. So the coaches, the professors would, you know, let you run the session based on what you had learned in the morning. So you would, you know, you show them, you get the approval, you get feedback, or how about if you, you know, put this cone there or move that player there, you know, how about if you change from two goals to four goals, how about if you do instead of three passes, two passes, and so they would just point out possibilities and correct you on the spot, which was really good. And then at the end, from what I can remember, you had to do, there was a final assessment for you to pass, which I believe, you know, everyone passed. And then you had to do a certain number of hours of coaching in whichever reality you have. And then it's almost like, you know, when you're learning how to drive here, you have to do 200 hours or something. So some certain amount of hours, 40 or something like that. And then you sent that to the main instructor there. In that case was Stephen. And so you, once he signs off, FFA and AFC send you your certificate after.
Do you recall who organized the certificate at that time? You say FFA probably?
It was FFA, Football New South Wales at the time.
Football New South Wales.
Yeah, so, and the investment was close to $1,200.
The cost and for, then the, for the course.
For the course, yeah. It was between $1,000, $1,200, around that. And then you would get included in the course, you would get a tracksuit, like, you know, pants and a jacket, Nike ones, really good. And then they would provide you with morning tea and afternoon tea as well. So, you know, frequently you would just be eating scones with cream and drinking coffee and etc. there in the breaks, and really expanding that network, which was the best part anyway.
It's really good. And yeah, there were lots of good coaches from all over Australia, a good way to network. And that's one thing that we're lacking at the moment is this coaching education in Australia. We don't have many of these the two in Australia, the FFA ones, coaching license and coaching, what was the other one?
Certificate.
Correct. I did those maybe 10 years ago and I don't even know how often we have them now. And we need those coaching education set more often to make more coaches in Australia. Do you have plans to do your AFC level 2, which usually doesn't happen in Australia, usually happens in Asia. You might have to go to Asia. And we only have a handful of people in Australia that have that level 2.
Yes, I do have the desire to do the level 2 AFC course, and I will do that. In fact, I wanted to do it sooner, but when I started looking at those countries in Asia and the schedule and everything, then for one reason or another, at the time that didn't happen, and then we had the pandemic, and now, you know, things are starting to go back to normal in a way. And that's when I'm starting to look again. So, yeah, I definitely will do the AFC level 2. And I think it's going to be a great addition for me.
And the level 2 goes deeper into everything as well. I think Miles had to go to Asia to do it. I know that Miles got it. Obviously, Rob Varela, Stephen Knight, Scott Gilligan might have. I think Sam Muniz have it. there could be a few other people in Australia that also have that level too. Renan, you now offer mentoring for coaches. How does your coaching mentoring work?
Yeah, Andre, as you mentioned before, I've been developing my work now in social media. And I created this mentorship program. So I call it the Super Coaches methodology. And then it's based on modern tactical aspects of the game. So it's a customized, like a personalized coaching education program. We use the Zoom platform, and we have 6 lessons plus a bonus lesson. So each lesson for about, 60 to 90 minutes. It's a one-on-one program. So basically we talk about tactics as in a way that it may be counterintuitive for some people, not so much talking about, complex movements and rotations and set plays and fancy, things. Mm-hmm. So we talk about, individual tactics, for example, how to, approximate as a defender and body posture and how to tackle, when to do a sliding block when you're defending, when to use a 1-2, how to use a 1-2, how to defend in individually as a zone and as a mixed type of defense. So the course is split into modules. So you in the first one, you learn about individual tactics in defense, and then module 2, individual tactics in attack. And then we go into group tactics in defense, module 4, group tactics in attack, and then module 5, collective tactics in defense, module 6, collective tactics in attack, and bonus module 4. So I help the coaches to prepare a session, or to prepare, a small micro cycle, little program for 4 weeks to run with their clubs, using the new knowledge that they've just acquired.
No, that's sounds like really, really good. Renan, who is this mentoring for? Who do you think would benefit from this coaching mentoring?
Look, Andre, at the moment, because of social media, we reaching people in, as you know, you have a great following. You can reach people in pretty much every continent on earth. So anyone that's interested to develop their knowledge in futsal and is starting to think about coaching, or has already started coaching and is looking to acquire more knowledge. So that's for those people. So if you're a beginner coach or even an intermediate coach, you would benefit from this. If you're a parent who wants to get involved, if you're a club owner who wants to provide this to your coaches and assistant coaches, so these are the people that would benefit the most. Probably not for high level end coaches, like professional coaches, not for that type of public at the moment, but for everybody else, I think they could benefit. And then we can also have a 15 minute Zoom meeting with them, and we can talk about some specific aspects within the coach's reality. So maybe you say, Henan, I'm here in Melbourne, I coach, my academy has these types of players, so they are 9 years old, I have 15 kids, I coach them twice a week, so we can sort of work together and customize and tailor the program a little bit better towards that. Like if you're coaching 3-year-olds, you don't need to know about collective tactics. Mm-hmm. How to defend in zone and how to do set plays and stuff like that. Even though it's there and it's on offer, it can still be slightly modified to suit your reality.
Mm-hmm. Understood. A last question about your coaching. You are very passionate about coaching kids What a difference when you coach an adult to when you coach a child.
Obviously, I think when I'm coaching a child, you know, since I became a parent, it's even more rewarding. And by the way, congratulations. So it's very rewarding to coach a kid. It requires a lot of patience, and it's, you know, it's a long process. I think the language that you use is one of the biggest things, you know, with kids. You know, you will talk about colors, you talk about numbers, you talk about shapes. You keep it simple, you keep it fun. You know, that's one of the main things when I'm coaching. And then it's actually funny you ask that, because my assistant coach at the moment, Josh Patterson, he's one of the, I started coaching him when he was 12. Now he's in the men's team here for us, and he's also my assistant. So he sees me coaching the men's, and then he sees me coaching, you know, the skills acquisition kids, and he goes like, what is happening? Because obviously the language with adults, I think it's more complex, you know. It's not more complex as in it's hard to understand, but it's more like, you know, straight to the point. You can sound a little bit harsh at times, you know. You can ask for more, you can, you know, try and really make them deliver what you ask, you know, and go into more complex tactical aspects of the game. As in, when you're coaching kids, you focus a lot on the fun and how you can introduce some of the technical aspects slowly into that, you know, kids that, you know, some kids, they, if you ask them to walk and talk at the same time, they will have trouble. So imagine if you put a ball in front of their foot. So it's the beginning of their journey. It's not their fault. It's no one's fault. So it's you just adjust according to the public. So I think, you know, patience, language, you know, and complexity of the subject and how you deliver it is the main difference between those two.
Can you be a good coach for kids and adults, or is that really hard to happen?
I believe so, Andrea. I believe so. I think if you flick the switch in your brain, you know, and it's not,
if
I don't think,
able to, yeah.
If you're able to flick the switch in your brain, like I tell the kids when they come from soccer to play futsal, you know, flick the switch. You know, most of the time, you know, for example, they're going to be trying to receive the pass with the inside of their foot, you know, the ball's going to hit the inside of their foot, it's going to go away, and the opposition will get it. They say, hey, guys, how about we try and, you know, start using the sole of our foot, you know, to take that first touch and direct it the way you want and keep more control and et cetera. So I use that term, you know, flick the switch in your brain. So I think coaches can do that. You know, flick the switch now. You are not coaching, you know, young children. You can be, you know, a bit more emphatic with your instructions and what you want them to deliver. And now I'm coaching kids again. So, okay, this is about fun. They don't need to do a set play, a complex rotation movement. It's not a big competition.
Renan, so have you ever accidentally sworn in front of the kids?
Good question.
Accidentally. No,
not swearing. I accidentally said the word crap.
That's okay. That shows you switched on.
Yeah, and then they laughed, you know, quite a lot. To be honest, and I don't use swear words, not even with the adults. I don't like it. I think they are unnecessary.
Fair enough. Very good. Now moving on to your social media. So you started your Instagram account in 2016. At this point right now, you have 518 posts on your Instagram account, which is a lot of content to make, but you became really active on social media at the start of the pandemic, like a lot of people, but different to a lot of people, they started and it stopped. You kept on going. Now you have over 5,000 followers on Instagram, regularly posting great futsal content, not just on Instagram, but on many social media platforms. Renan, could you share with us a bit of your journey on social media, making futsal content?
Yeah, absolutely, André. Well, first of all, your channel has been inspiring me since I got to know it. So thank you also you for sharing all your content and deliver so much to the futsal community. So I had I have been inspired by, you know, you and many other coaches to do work in social media, and that feeling that I had, you know, I need to start this, was just growing exponentially inside me. Mm-hmm. So, and then with the pandemic, as you said, you know, it got real, because we had something that a lot of the times we didn't have before, which was time. Yeah. So at home, you know, we had I had time to sort of start thinking about things, and I thought the first thing I need to know is how this thing works, you know. So I had an Instagram account for that I opened, you know, in 2016, that I probably had one post, I don't know, off me running, just random. Yeah. And then no posts for like 4 years or something. And I thought, oh, maybe this is something, you know, because where I live at the moment, and that, you know, like I feel sometimes that I'm a bit hidden a little bit here where I am, you know, countryside, and, you know, some will say I'm in the middle of nowhere, and I love the place. It's really lovely and the people are great. But I'm, you know, not in connection at the moment with, you know, you guys in Melbourne or people in Sydney or people in Brisbane. So mm-hmm. In that respect, I thought, you know, social media will help me to make myself known and seen a little bit more. Okay. And the way I thought would be a good way to do it was just helping people, in providing them value through the content. Obviously very targeted content for, you know, futsal lovers and coaches and players to an extent. So I decided to learn about how Instagram works. So I went and did a course with a guy in Brazil called Paulo Cuenca. So he's an absolute genius. His course in Portuguese, obviously called Superpoder. So I learned a lot about how Instagram works and how, you know, you can provide value, you can create relationships, and, you know, later on maybe sell your services and products. So and I wanted to do that in a very very light sort of way. I really don't want to, and have no intentions to be just selling things there. So you follow me, you know that I post on my stories some personal things, and, you know, about family, about sports, about mindfulness, and etc. You know, so I wanted to, yes, I will be providing services, as you asked before, and products maybe even. Like you do it yourself and very well, but that's at the moment, it's not the main goal. So the main goal continues to be to create content and to provide value through the posts, you know, and the videos. So I have the YouTube channel as well, which I haven't posted a video for a couple of months at the moment, just simply because of other commitments. But I try and, as you said, not to stop because the pandemic mm-hmm. sort of slowed down. So a lot of people, they just did, you know, oh, it's pandemic, let's do this. So I think it's something that you sort of need to continue regardless of, you know, being going through a pandemic or not. So it's something that is way into the future. Like, you know, it could be that one day this is going to be our main source of income. You know, like I have a lot of things happening in the offline at the moment, and the online is helping me to expand my connections in the offline as well. You know, so like mm-hmm. I have in the mentorship program that we spoke about before, I have 3 students I have had so far, and one is in North America, one's in Europe, and one's in Southeast Asia. So it's three continents that I'm reaching just through Instagram. And that makes me really happy that I'm, in a way, contributing to someone to develop their skills and their knowledge further.
Yeah, you touch a few good points there, Renan. The first point I want to just talk a bit further is providing value. People only follow you on social media if you provide value for them. So a lot of people ask, not anymore, but the early days, they used to get some followers. But social media is not like that. You prove that if you provide value, you get followers. And now you're up to 5,000 followers. What social media platforms are you on at the moment?
Yeah, I agree with you, definitely, in providing value. That's the way to go. And it happens organically. So, you know, the algorithm in the social media just starts providing your content to new people and they become your followers. So I celebrate all achievements, all little milestones, and I've told people that I will. But it shouldn't be your main concern, like anyone's main concern. I think it's just another metric, you know, how many likes, how many followers, how many this and how many that. So if you're conscious that you're providing value, that's the main thing. You're happy with what you're doing. And the other question was about the social media. So at the moment, the three main platforms that I've been using are Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Mm-hmm. I have created an account and I have some things at Twitter, LinkedIn, and TikTok, which is quite surprising because I haven't posted for a while. And then there's some content at TikTok and I'm getting to 200 followers now without doing much. And even on Pinterest, I've created an account there. So, obviously I don't pay anyone to manage this for me. And there's only so much you can do. Having the work offline, having the family, two young kids, and it's, you know, sometimes it's just going to stay idle and sometimes it's going to have, you know, content flying around.
My little baby during early September, and I've told my, actually my wife has told me that I have to take a break in September from social media a little bit. So what I'm doing right now is I'm scheduling posts from September to November. So that gives me 3 months posts is scheduled, so I don't have to worry too much about social media. Renan, what are the main skills you have to learn when you want to get into social media? Or what skills you had to learn?
Well, I had to learn obviously everything about the platform and keep up with the updates that, you know, how to post photos, how to post carousels, how to post videos and reels and, you know, things like that, and stories and all the tools that they have available. So through that course, I learned that. And then that put together with my knowledge and skills in futsal, then I started to work on video editing. So there's a couple of softwares that I use to help me with editing videos and putting things together before I post them. I think those are the main skills.
Mm-hmm. What softwares and apps do you use?
For futsal content, for the players and the tactical movements and arrows and things, I use the Tactical iPad, which is a subscription app, really good. Use it on my iPad with the Apple Pencil, so really easy to use, and that allows me to convert that animation into video. So I export that as a video to, if I'm working on the iPad, I just use InShot, which is a free app to edit things there, and, you know, even put, you know, some royalty free music and stuff. Then if I'm on the laptop and I'm bringing content from my GoPro from training or something, I took on your advice actually, and I've been using Wondershare Filmora for editing the videos. So So that's pretty much the tools that I use. And obviously, like billions of people, I use Canva.
You can't go wrong with Canva, can you?
No. I'm
so
trying,
professional.
Yeah, I'm trying the premium subscription with Canva as well. So really useful to resize.
I think if you pay for the whole year, it's $160. So that breaks down to 14 per month. It's worth it.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you can quickly resize, remove background, you know, access to the full library and etc. So it's really worth it to content creators.
Now, that's really good. And actually, I've been using, a lot of people have also been using, I don't know if you heard an app called CapCut. Have you heard of the app?
Yeah, so I heard someone saying that it's really useful to create subtitles, is it?
Yeah, so CapCut has a function to put subtitles automatically, and then you can just fix the subtitles because we don't speak the perfect English. Yeah. We're always making mistakes. So you can make it look really good, and it's a free app because it was made by TikTok. So TikTok created the app for people to create more content, and believe it or not, the app has got everything you need. And I'm not even promoting them here because it's a free app. I don't get paid for anything for saying that.
Thanks for the tip.
A few years later on now, what impacts social media has made on your futsal career and on your futsal academy?
I have to say that obviously, in my futsal academy, you know, other than, you know, some kids, you know, becoming my followers and following and admiring the content, it hasn't, you know, it hasn't changed a lot in the offline here in my day-to-day coaching. So they, you know, I continue to be Coach Hennen and I do things with them. So the social media things are sort of the older kids, like the 15, 16, 17 year olds, are following me now and interacting with the contents and etc. But it hasn't changed much. What changed, on the other hand, was how I'm starting to get seen a little bit more, not only in Australia, but, you know, people in Brazil that I had never met. Brazil, as you know, it's huge. And then, you know, people will follow me from Brazil, Australia, and some other continents now. So I think through the content creation and the value that's being provided and in sharing those things, I've expanded, you know, significantly my network of contacts and people related to futsal. And I think I should have mentioned that before, but one of the main things that social media provides, and for me being here, you and I obviously do that, but it's the ability to provide futsal, quality futsal content in English. You know, there's some extremely amazing futsal content in Portuguese, in Spanish, even in Italian, but, you know, it kind of is limited, you know, good English posts in futsal topics and related that you see a lot more in football. So I think it's being the universal language. You know, if I was providing content in Portuguese, I don't know, maybe I would reach Brazil and Portugal mainly, but being in English, I'm reaching the Oceania, I'm reaching Asia, I'm reaching Europe, Africa. You know, maybe I'm missing out on possible people in Brazil that don't speak English, but you know, you have to make choices in life, and at the moment my choice is to continue to work on content in English.
For sure. Brennan, it's been a great chat, but we have to finish it off playing a little game that we always play, and then I'm gonna say thanks to you later and congratulations on your game. Works, I don't know if you have heard of before, the rapid fire questions. You've got 40 seconds to answer as many questions as you can.
Ooh, I'll try.
You have to be quick, no much thinking. I know you like thinking well before you say, and you speak very well, but now it's about speed. It's about being quick on the spot, okay?
Oh, let's try.
So there's no right and wrong answers. Whatever answer is the right one. Just so you know, top of the table is Damon Shaw from the UK on 13, but the best Australian is Arturo Garzon Diaz from Victoria on 12 answers.
Okay.
So when you're ready, let's get into it. Let me just turn up the bell here, and when the bell rings, you can finish the answer. You can finish that question. All right, when you're ready.
Hopefully the internet won't break up during the questions.
All right, sure. Blame the internet. Let's go. 3, 2, 1. Best futsal player in the world currently?
Falcão.
Renan, currently, Falcão doesn't play anymore.
Oh, sorry. Didn't hear you. Currently. Can we start again?
All right, let's start again. Okay, let's start again. Let's go. 3, 2, 1. Best futsal player in the world currently?
Ferrão.
Who was better, Falcão or Manuel Tobias?
Falcão.
Favorite holiday destination?
Melbourne.
Would you rather be the best player of the world or win the World Cup?
Win the World Cup.
Your favorite skill move?
Pedalada.
One attribute that a good player must have?
Patience.
Would you rather play or coach?
Coach.
Your favorite hobby?
Play futsal.
Favorite social media platform?
Instagram.
One soccer star that would be a good futsal player?
Neymar.
Should players play futsal the whole year round?
Yes.
Look, you go 11. That's a really good job, man. I mean, together with the second best Australian. So you're the second best Australians, but with a lot of people. You're together with Vinicius Leite, Jordan Guerrero, Peter Parth, Zelda Abrahams, Alex Novatsis, Mick Day, and Seb Bernhard. So second best Australian.
I'm honored to be part of this select group.
It's really good, really good. So let me just write down here. Renan Fenerich, third overall and second best Australian. Renan, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, sharing so much with us, so many advices for people. Congratulations on all your work in the Northern New South Wales. Is that right? Northern New South Wales?
Yeah, that's
or North
correct,
Coast?
Yeah. North Coast within the Northern New South Wales.
Perfect. So in the Northern New South Wales, congratulations on all your work and thank you again for coming on the podcast.
No, look, my pleasure, Andrea. Thank you so much for inviting me and congratulations on your podcast. And I'm always listening, you know, sometimes when I'm running, sometimes when I'm driving, sometimes when I'm working, I'm always listening to your guests and I feel really blessed and honored to have been invited by you. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Renan. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Stay tuned for the next one. I look forward to talking to so many great people in Australia that work so much on improving futsal in the country. Thanks, everyone.